When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Blood Red Podcast. My name is Keith McDonald, and in the absence of Joe Rimmer and Sean Bradbury, I will be your host this afternoon here at the Lovelocks Cafe in Liverpool City Centre. I'm delighted to be joined by Theo Squires and Tom Cavilla for today's episode to dissect all things Liverpool, from Liverpool's pre-season tour in Singapore and, of course, Wednesday's defeat to Bayern Munich. Theo, starting off things, how's things, mate?
I've been better, mate. Full of cold at the moment. Been away on holiday, nice sun, getting a nice tan on the go, and you come back here and it's just miserable. I think it was miserable before I went away as well, and it's just, I want to mow my garden. It's so overgrown at the moment, and it just seems to be days of rain after rain after rain. And that's enough of a first world problem. Liverpool still haven't signed a holding midfielder. And now I've got to do with you, this amateur asking me questions on your podcast debut as a host. Now, I think that's a pretty solid debut opening from you.
Introduction. Definitely first time for anyone watching at home.
Yeah, it's not as though we've had any teething problems with you slurring words or Tom breaking the equipment next to me. But now we're good to go now, and hopefully this can be a therapy session for us all.
And Tom, I believe it's your first time here at Lovelocks, first time on location. How's things? Finally happy to be unleashed on the podcast.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Different setup today, although sat next to Theo, who's nursing a cold at the minute, so we'll have to...
Keeper's got a cold as well.
I'm fighting a cold.
You're in a mess, mate. You're surrounded.
I'd be ill by today, end of today.
Well, we've got plenty to talk about. Of course, Liverpool's pre-season tour of Singapore came to an end on Wednesday. That, of course, a 4-3 defeat to Bayern Munich. Starters, lads, can I just get your kind of initial thoughts on the game? There was plenty of discussions of certain points within the game. You know, plenty of goals going forward, but also at the other end, you know, some concerns about Liverpool's defending, the new look formation, you know, potential gaps. I mean, it is only pre-season. I think it is worth saying, and, you know, let's not take too much from this, and let's not, you know, undo all kind of all Liverpool's work they've done so far in the other games and all those pleasing sights. But Theo, just your kind of initial reaction then from...
I think it's pretty much the same as what we've seen throughout pre-season so far. Really good from the attacking players. Like, they're linking up so well, and it doesn't matter which of the five are playing, they're all contributing to goals. Like, we got another great assist from Salah when Diaz came on. That was a superb one too, wasn't it? That diagonal, the third goal, the give and go between Jota and Gakpo for the opener was great as well. Nunes is causing nuisance and mischief, and he should have got a couple of goals, let's be honest. Yeah. They look so good, and you're just itching to get the season underway, to get them all unleashed, to see what we can do this season. But the rest of the team, it's just the same old headaches, and you're wanting these issues to have been addressed weeks ago at the start of pre-season, not now when you've got just over a week until the start of the season against Chelsea. Like, Curtis Jones, he's done all right, but he's not a holding midfielder. Trent Alexander-Arnold is not a holding midfielder. We're seeing promising signs from McAllister and Szoboszlai, the youngsters, but there is a big void in that midfield that still needs to be addressed. And I know you've got it down on your agenda for later in the podcast, and we'll get to it then, but it's just like you're running out of time here, and you're setting up yourself up for a fall. And then the defence, they need a centre-back as well. I think we're all, even though it's just pre-season, scratching our heads at the sight of Chol Matip starting, because you'd be really surprised if he starts against Chelsea. But he cannot do that right centre-back role in this formation. So that is another concern there. It's a bit better if Konate is there, but there's still so many voids and spaces in this Liverpool defence that you can attack. And while Leicester weren't able to take advantage, they still got in behind them a number of times at the weekend. We saw Bayern getting a number of times behind them, and they scored four goals. There are these same concerns throughout pre-season, and they need to be addressed, and sooner the better.
So I'm going to put you on the spot a bit here with kind of, you know, summing up yesterday's action. Is it hard to enjoy Liverpool's attacking play when there is so kind of obvious glaring holes in the defence? You know, does it make you kind of... I mean, initially watching yesterday, I very much thought of 13-14 Liverpool and 17-18 Liverpool in terms of, you know, probably needing to score three goals a game to win games, which, as we all know, and when Liverpool competed for the big honours, it's not a sustainable, you know, model of playing football. And whilst it might be exciting and make Liverpool a really good watch for the neutrals, those kind of glaring issues that we are seeing at the back and, as Theo says, on the right-hand side of defence, does it make it, you know, hard to enjoy the attacking play because there's such a dependency on them to get the goals now?
I still enjoyed it. It's still good to watch going forward. Like you said, you know, Gakpo and Diaz, they're always entertaining to watch. The defence is becoming a bit more of a concern. I agree with that. There just seemed to be a lot of space. Sorry for buying down.
You're already coming down with something, mate. It's not us.
I told you, this illness, I'm blaming Theo for this.
This is brilliant commitment to the Blood Red podcast, by the way. Three ill musketeers fighting on.
No, but you could see it with when Bayern were coming down the left side. There was just loads of space down there. Sané, ball played to the back for Sané for his goal, and then obviously Gnabry scored as well. While I was watching that, I was thinking, it doesn't seem right, the amount of space they're getting into here. You know, obviously that's Bayern. You're not going to be playing teams as good as that every week in the Premier League. But Liverpool definitely, you know, have to look at this, because we saw it last season as well, when teams were just getting behind them so easily, and, you know, Klopp will be aware of it, and it's just whether or not they go out and buy someone now. I think they probably do need one defender at this point. You know, Matip can be good on his day, and same for Gomez, but they've got injury problems as well, and you don't want to be left in that situation again where relying on Nat Phillips and people like that. You know, we saw it at the start of last season when Nat Phillips, I think he played in that home
Crystal
game
Palace
at Crystal
game,
Palace.
Yeah.
Was that the first or second
first
game?
First home game, yeah.
And, you know, he got exposed quite easily by Zaha that game. So, you know, you could see that kind of happening again if, you know, one or two players got injured. That would be in the same position again where, he'd be coming into the defence. Although he's not a bad player, but, you know, against the best players in the league, that's what's going to happen.
I mean, Tom, we've heard a lot about left-sided centre-halves being on Liverpool's shortlist this summer if they can get, you know, other areas addressed within the squad. Is the priority now just to get a centre-half who can play either side? Is the right side just as much as a concern as the left side now, given, you know, how important Ibrahim Konate is to that system? And you know, to throw a bigger question at you both, is too much being asked of Ibrahim Konate and Trent Alexander-Arnold? Is that a sustainable model going, you know, to cover two positions over, you know, a 60-game season? Is that too much of an ask for any player?
Potentially, yeah. I mean, we'll find out if Liverpool don't buy anyone. I think they probably are at the point where, you know, buying a centre back is probably better than not buying any, and just, you know, focusing on a left-sided one. Just as I was saying before, you don't really want to be in that position where, you know, you're going towards October, November time, you're already out of the title race, and you're like 10 points behind Man City, and, you know, you're then waiting for the January window to be able to do something. And while I think January could be an option, if they don't sign someone this summer, I think they will buy someone in January. So you've always got that as like a backup option. But it's just whether you want to risk going to that point, you know, and you could be out of the title already. So,
and Theo, to kind of throw the same question at you then, is we've spoken a lot about the kind of ranking of Liverpool's remaining summer targets. You know, is it two midfielders and a defender? Is it a defender and one midfielder? You know, the kind of the makeup. I think everyone agrees that Liverpool need at least two more players between now and the end of the window. If I was to, you know, give you the keys to George Macca's office and, you know, the finances to Liverpool and FSG's credit
password
cards,
to his computer so we can put in these offers.
All of the details available to do what you need to do to get Liverpool in shape for September and beyond, what are you doing and kind of what are the key points of the squad that you're looking to address, having watched, you know, these few preseason games now?
The first one is the holding midfielder. That's obvious. They need a number six. We know there's been two bids that have got in for Romeo Lavia. He seems to be the desired target, though there's a bit of haggling whether they'll actually meet the 50 million asking price. If he's not the answer, it can't be a case of, like they've done in the past, oh, we'll just wait for him then. We'll get him in January. We'll get him next summer. They need someone now. Otherwise, they are in for a difficult season. I'd still like to see them getting a second midfielder beyond that, but before that, a centre-back's got to be the priority, because before Fabinho and Henderson went, centre-back was becoming the priority. I think Joe Gomez could be an ace up the sleeve here when in terms of the system. Like, we've seen him as a right-back when they're letting Tsimikas become the inverted left full-back so far this year. We haven't actually seen him as a centre-back, and now he's got the pace where he could cover from Konate on the right, and he has experience playing as a left-back, so I think he could be an option on the left side as well. So he is that go-to utility player pretty much all across the back four, and he's fine, whereas a Matip can't be. I think Matip's only that solution, and you're the replacement for Van Dijk as the centre one when it becomes the three. So you still need someone with a bit of pace, a bit of height on them, who can be that, I'm sort of a fullback, I'm sort of a centre-back. It's a lot to ask on Konate or Trent, And this is what has made it frustrating that they haven't addressed the players so far, in the terms of they haven't had a holding midfielder who's going to be the holding midfielder. Like, if you put in peak Fabinho in this side from 2019-20, you're not having these same issues, are you? Because this is how we're going to set up. We've got a whole midfielder that covers absolutely everything. All the blades of grass will steal the ball off everyone. Your centre-backs are at the absolute peak, and you can expect that little bit more from them. Liverpool now, they're expecting and demanding these 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10 performances from them week in, week out. And that's one thing when you've got the midfielders to accompany them, when you've got the backups to accompany them. At the moment, Liverpool don't. And it's like, if you're getting into this place where you're already playing catch-up before this even started, as we saw happen last year with the injuries, you're already setting yourself up for a fall again. So they're running out of time to address these issues. You're a little bit concerned about how the team's going to look against Chelsea on the opening day, with the only blessing being Chelsea have no midfielders either. They've got a couple of injuries themselves, but it's a month. It's going to be a long month, isn't it? Get in a midfielder, get in a centre-back, and if you've got room left, get in another midfielder, because there's so much inexperience there. We're scarred by the injuries of yesteryear, when you could have like 11 midfielders and half of them would be out injured by September. You'd like to think it's not that bad now with the new signings and everything, but they still need to find this happy middle ground. You can't go from one extreme to the other.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
No, absolutely. And just to play devil's advocate here, is there a case of, you know, is there a slight bit of sympathy for Liverpool here, Tom, in the sense of, you know, they have been caught cold, I think, by this Saudi assault, you know, that has kind of taken place at Anfield. Obviously, they've lost Jordan Henderson, and Fabinho earlier this week joined Al Ettihad, the Saudi Pro League champions, for those who didn't know. But
did you know before this week?
I didn't know until about 3 weeks ago, to be quite honest with you, Theo. My Saudi Pro League knowledge is kind of steadily progressing by the day. But, you know, as we say, they kind of lost Fabinho, who I think a few of us had said he was a potential sellable asset this summer. I don't think anyone really expected Liverpool would get a fee that commanded them to let him go. And I think the £40 million was just, you know, quite simply, you know, too lucrative of an offer for both the player and the club to turn down. Do you think now, do you feel sorry, not sorry for Liverpool, I think that's the wrong word, but do you kind of understand why they are now taking a bit of a steady approach, or taking longer to get kind of a holding midfielder through the door? People are saying that the bids for Lavia have been, you know, steadily increased. Maybe Liverpool should just pay the £50 million whack now they've had this, or they know this £40 million's coming, whether, you know, the payment plans are in, you know, 12, 24 months or whatever. Do you think that losing Fabinho has kind of changed the whole kind of dynamic of what Liverpool are after this summer? Because no longer are they after a Lavia who could come in and play alongside Fabinho in Europa League games, or maybe share that burden, but now they're after Lavia, and now someone who, as Theo says, someone who can come in and slot in straight away. And you're talking about Fabinho, you know, 19-20 level. So, you know, do you kind of feel kind of some understanding towards Liverpool's situation here?
Can you repeat the question, please?
A very long-winded answer of saying, have Saudi Arabia really messed up Liverpool's plans this summer?
Yes, they have. I don't think, you know, anyone was expecting both Henderson and Fabinho to go this summer. I think everyone could see Keita would be leaving, Oxlade-Chamberlain the same. Milner was kind of a 50-50, you didn't really know which way it was going to go. With Henderson, that was, you know, a lot of fans were sort of saying, you know, he's had his time, his legs are going. I don't think anyone actually really thought he'd go this summer. You know, you were thinking that might be 1 year down the line or 2 years down the line, but not now. And Fabinho, the same, you know, that was... That out
3 years
nowhere.
Left on his contract, wasn't
that
it?
That was out of nowhere. So, of course, that's then messed up how Liverpool, you know, what they were planning to do, and it now gives you a kind of a second midfield rebuild in the space, in the space of one window, essentially, because you've lost two more midfielders. So, yeah, it's not ideal, but I don't think you can, you know, they've sold them now, so you've got to get on with it. I think 40 million fee is, you're not, you know, they weren't going to get that from anyone else from him, so I can understand why that's an offer they've taken for him. Henderson for 12 million, he kind of feel like they could have got a little bit more for him. You know, you've seen other players going for quite big fees, and I felt they probably could have got a bit more, but you take that. You now got 52 million to spend on the midfielder from that. Lavia then obviously would come into that price, effectively paying for that transfer in a way, so I could understand why, you know, fans are getting a bit on edge about it, because you'd think that, you know, you can get Lavia based on that, and then you should be going and getting another one, because they simply need another one due to the amount of players that have left this summer. But yeah, obviously the way they were going to go about it has been changed by what's happened in the market, but you've got to react to it and yeah, get some players in.
You've got to think a month ago, it looked like Thiago was the one that was going to go. There was the interest from Turkey, rumours of Barcelona, Saudi as well. And then it's, oh, we can't get Thiago. We'll just get your other two midfielders then. But Fabinho, he was always in this strange position where, despite how bad he was last year, of those three senior midfielders, he was the only one I think we thought would all be starting this season. But at the same time, he was the first one you'd happily sell because of how bad he got last season. And you knew that there was that resale value there. Like so many times in recent years, Liverpool have lost players on free transfers. I think maybe they should have just sold him, taken the money a few years ago. Like, yeah, you might get another year out of them, but if you get the money, you're in the position to go again.
Yeah.
And now that's actually happened. It's like, oh, come back. We want them.
Yeah.
But no, it's a difficult position. And I think if we'd known that those two midfielders were going to go at the start of the summer, so if Fabinho and Henderson had knocked on Klopp's door at the end of May, said, thanks, but I think it's time.
Yeah.
And the Saudi interest was aware then. You get them gone by the start of pre-season. Liverpool get their player in before that Singapore. I think everyone's really happy.
Yeah.
Like, you look into the future, you've got a really good fee for Fabinho, you've got a respectable fee for Henderson when he was a player we all expected to go for nothing in a couple of years' time. And it's a struggle now, but it gives you more minutes, more experience to the younger players, and you can, it's a clean slate. But the fact that we're at the, almost at the end of pre-season now, we don't know what the first choice midfield is. There is a clear void, a hole without that number six, and you don't know who's going to fill that. And even if you bring in Alavia, you're going, well, is the first choice midfield then Alavia, Szoboszlai and McAllister, three players who have never played together before, who weren't Liverpool players back in May. That's a huge ask to get up to speed like that with a week to go to the new season. That's where you get this anxiety as well. But then Liverpool, if they go and spend 50 million on someone, I think that will appease fans a little bit. They're just hoping it can go from strength to strength, players can find their feet quickly, and there's enough there to sort of ease this transitional period.
Absolutely. And I know a lot has been made, Theo, of Lavia only playing 29 Premier League games, which is kind of stark comparison in kind of, you know, what Henderson, you know, over 400 games for Liverpool, and Fabinho, I think 219 was his total across all competitions. So that's a huge wealth of experience. But is he still the first choice for you, even, you know, with the 50 million price tag and the kind of lack of Premier League proven, if you want to say that?
It's a difficult one to really say, because he does seem to be the one that Liverpool want. He was the one that was always earmarked as this long-term replacement for Fabinho. But it was a player they seemed to be happy to wait for until they realised Fabinho was going. And long-term, absolutely, he can be the solution. He's got a very high ceiling. He's a talented player. He's already got this first initial Premier League experience. But you still feel that you want a little bit more. Like, I think some of the doubts about that fee is we've got Stefan Pesetic here, and he's 6 months, 9 months, whatever, younger than the player. He's got similar experience. They'd probably made identical playing records last year if it wasn't for Pesetic's season-ending injury. It's like he was Liverpool's already long-term for being your replacement. And while that's two players there who can play the position, if one of them's going through an iffy period, it's a big ask to then turn to the other teenager.
Do you think people have forgotten how good Stefan Pesetic was when he came into that side?
Yeah, I think so. But then at the same time, he never went into a good Liverpool side. He went into a really bad Liverpool side.
That's a testament to him, though, isn't it? And how he stood out.
But they were losing most weeks. So it's almost a clean slate for him to go and see what he can do in a fully functional midfield. And he's still got to shake off the injury. We've seen youngsters, they'll take one massive step forward and take a small one back. Like Elliot's been up and down, Kay Gordon. It's a big ask to put on their shoulders. Like, go and be our first choice midfielder. Stay clear of injuries. Make a mockery of your age. Make a mockery of the asking price. You're spinning all these plates and hoping everything stays up, nothing breaks, it all comes together. Realistically, it's not going to be that smooth. It's not going to be that easy for Liverpool. But then who else are they going to get? Who can they get at this stage of the season? Or stage of pre-season, who you know is available, who could be affordable with that Premier League experience, who's going to get better as the years go along.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
And even if Liverpool were to have, you know, 105, 6, 7 million, it very much feels like there is a lack of natural number sixes out there who could come in and do a job. So, I mean, you know, Declan Rice is the obvious one, who's obviously moved on from West Ham to Arsenal. Enzo Fernandez earlier this year. Moises Caicedo is someone who a lot of Liverpool fans like, but it does feel like it's not just a Liverpool-specific problem. It is like a wider kind of footballing problem. I don't know if that's something you agree with.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I think you get it in certain areas of the pitch, obviously that being one of them at the moment, and strikers usually the other one. You know, trying to find a good striker on the market is never seems to be easy. Yeah, I mean, there's not many players out there that probably suit Liverpool or that, you know, Liverpool will want to sign. I think they're quite particular in who they sign, and you know, it has to be, you always hear like Pep Linders and Klopp saying have to be the right person for Liverpool, and not just in terms of their play but in terms of the person. And I guess they do all the due diligence behind the scenes and in terms of, you know, getting the right person through the door, so they wouldn't rush into making a signing if they didn't think it was the right fit for the club and, you know, fitting in with the teammates. So I think you've just got to trust, you know, Klopp and the backroom staff, that they know the profile they want, and they're prepared to wait quite often for the player they want to get. And you know, maybe in this case, you know, Lavia might be the one they go for, or they might wait for someone else they might have lined up somewhere else. So I think you've just got to be patient.
Maybe from Fluminense.
Yeah.
Well, for eagle-eyed viewers, you'll notice that Tom Cavilla's brought in a lovely souvenir this afternoon. Andre, of course, is a player who's been linked with Liverpool in kind of recent days. Not a player that I know a lot of us probably don't know a great deal about. You know, I think I looked yesterday, 22, played, I think, over 140 games in the Brazilian, well, for Fluminense. I think I've said that right, have I, Tom?
Yeah.
Decent pronunciation. So is he also another one who, if Liverpool were to bring him in alongside Lavia, you know, a player who's coming to a league he's not played in before, it's a big ask. It's very similar to Lavia, you know, in terms of making that step up, Theo. Is that a fair assessment, would you say?
I'd feel a little bit more comfortable about it. It's still a step out of his comfort zone, but we've seen the South American market. It doesn't seem to be as big a step up for them anymore. Like you mentioned Caicedo there. Yep. McAllister is another example. Look how many players Chelsea and Man City have signed. There's a lot of South American players that are just going straight into these
half
big clubs.
Half the Brighton team to be.
And they all seem to be just taken to it like a duck to water. Yep. And you think, well, why aren't Liverpool looking at that South American market? Like, there have been those questions. Why couldn't they sign McAllister for $7 million when he joined Brighton, or Caicedo when he joined Brighton for like $5 million? Maybe Andre could be that player.
Yeah,
he is a little bit older, so he gives you that experience. He's now a full Brazil international. He's a different type of holder midfielder. I think the comparison's been more to a Thiago, you know, someone who's good on the ball, retains it.
Yeah.
So you think maybe he's brought in as a long-term replacement for Thiago. It could be that gradual succession, as we've seen with Diaz and Gakpo for Firmino and Mane. But it's still a big ask to go into this Liverpool midfield. It just gives you a bit more comfort in the terms of there's depth there. We've got an extra option. We can have that little bit more protection. And he's a highly rated player. Like, I've done a couple of pieces on him this week. And he's like, he was being not fully compared to a João Gomes or Dani, I think it was Danilo, who went to Forest and went to Wolves. But when they were all in Brazil, similar age group, he was the one who was outshining him in that position. And they've both come into the Premier League and they've done well with their respective clubs. And you think he is supposed to be the one who's the next one, who's going to be this big Brazilian player who's going to take to the European market, take it by storm, go for a big fee, and everyone's going, oh, who is this kid? Where's he's come from? Yeah. Now, he might caught Liverpool fans off guard a little bit. There have been links for a year or something, but he's potentially a player they've had their eye on for a while. When you look at their other connections with Fluminense, like Alan went on loan there in 2019, and it was because Alan was on loan there that Liverpool were first aware of Pitaluga, you know, the goalkeeper they've got in the reserve ranks. So they're able to look at his training and his like little scouting report things to see how this young goalkeeper who's only 16, 17 was doing in training sessions and reserve games. Now, Andre's, I think, 18 months older, but Pitaluga was playing for the reserves when he was 16. So they're going to have played games together. There are going to be plenty of reports, if this was a player who's grabbed their eye then for the last 4 years, that they can take notice of. And by all means, Andre was the star of their academy, by the sounds of it. He was the captain for a while. It was this golden generation. You think if he's this one, they've thought he's a big talent, people are going to be taking notice. Alisson's trained with them, of course, a few years ago. Yeah. And Alisson's brother was still playing for them as recently as last year. So he's been his teammate for a couple of years. All these ingredients together, I think Liverpool have been aware for this midfielder for a while. They've been watching him from a distance for a while. And maybe now it's a good time to strike. But we've always still got the headache of Brazilian sides don't like to sell mid-season for them. Like the summer now for us, it's mid-season for them. They'd rather wait until January.
Of course, like, obviously the Brazilian transfer window closed.
Closed yesterday, didn't it?
So
you think Gabriel Jesus, he left in January, didn't he, when he joined?
They pre-agreed that, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, and it's the same for the South American clubs. Like Alvarez was agreed 6 months in early or something like this.
He joined after the season.
They don't tend to like to do it, and I think it depends on... So they've got the South American Champions League game next week. I'm sure TC is the expert compared to me. But that's going to be decided. whether they can let him go now or if Liverpool are going to have to wait for January. But he seems more this long-term successor for Thiago if he is a player that they go for.
Absolutely, and I think any midfielder, Tom, coming into Liverpool in the weeks, months and years ahead will be licking their lips at lining up behind that, you know, front five options that Liverpool now boast. Probably, I struggle to think of a team in Europe who have better depth in the attacking third. As we said at the top of the show, that was highlighted yesterday. You know, Salah gets an assist, Gakpo, Nunez, you know, Diaz all feature, all kind of catch their eye in their own ways. Ahead of Chelsea, then, I know there is one more pre-season game at Preston on Monday, but...
Can you say the team we're playing, please?
Darmstadt. Darmstadt.
How's that compared to your Brazilian pronunciation?
Brazilian pronunciation isn't there, but it's not as bad as Ian Doyle's, who still struggles to pronounce Stefan Bacetic's name, despite him
playing... I think we all do.
Well, speak for yourself. But, yeah, so... Tom, how does Liverpool's front three look going to Stamford Bridge, pending any injury, with, you know, without any injuries ahead of, you know, next week?
It's a tough one. I couldn't call it, honestly. It's the problem with this team now is we've got so many options in that area. It'd be good to have the same problem in the other areas of the pitch as well, particularly in defence, but... It's really hard to call because if you're looking at it now, I wouldn't be able to tell you, like...
I think we can say who's nailed on. I think Mo Salah, of everyone, is nailed
Salah,
on the right.
You've got Salah on the right. I would play Diaz. I think he should be starting most games in the Premier League. I just feel like people have kind of...
Forgotten.
Yeah, because he was so good, especially that first season when he came in.
And even at the start
in.
Of last season before his injury, I thought he was one of Liverpool's brightest sparks. Showed it again yesterday, didn't he? It was a really tidy finish
in the
second half.
It's a testament to him that you'd be happy with whatever trio out of the five they played. You don't really mind.
I think it's very much horses for courses, isn't it, in the sense of, you know, who they're up against. I always think, whilst Gakpo for me is probably the best technically, I think if you're playing a game at Anfield, you probably wouldn't need him as much because, you know, you're not needing someone to drop into the space and create an extra midfielder. You know, you're probably going to dominate possession. You're probably looking at a more natural finisher like a Jota, you know, someone like a Diaz. But I suppose, you know, all three of us will have different lineups for Chelsea next week and for Bournemouth the week after.
They'll probably change. You ask us for one thing now, we'll give you something completely different next week.
I think I'd side more towards Gakpo, to be honest. I just think I don't really see how you could drop him.
And is that regardless of the opposition? Just he's a staple of the front three?
As much as I like Nunez and like want him to do well and think he can do well, I just don't think you could leave Gakpo out. So I just think if you're going to play, you could potentially use him as a midfield option as we saw last season. But I think he has to be in the team somehow because I think he's too good to
He's a brilliant footballer, isn't he? And I wrote something yesterday where it's kind of, you know, comparing the mood of when he arrived and, you know, everyone was like, Liverpool don't need another forward and... You know, maybe took a couple of weeks to get up and running and maybe kind of find his feet at Liverpool. But, you know, Theo, he's kind of gone from strength to strength, hasn't he, now? And as Tom says, he's probably the one of, you know, five or six names on a team sheet who, depending on who you ask, is nailed on to start almost every game if he's fit and firing.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Yeah, potentially. Like, it's still horses for courses, I would say. There are going to be games where you'd start Nunez ahead of him. But it is... another testament to the club's recruitment team's abilities. The fact that for so long we thought, how on earth are they going to replace Sadio Mane? How on earth are they going to replace Bobby Firmino? And they've just found two players, brought them in as gradual replacements, 6 months playing alongside him. And then we're like, oh, that's how. That's perfect. We're sorted. And it's great to see. And you're hoping that they could do the same with the midfield, but doing it all in one summer is a big ask compared to 18 months, two-year process. He's a very good player and he's playing with a lot of confidence now and you're looking forward to seeing him in a good Liverpool team as opposed to what he had to put up with for the majority of his first 6 months compared to Diaz almost winning quadruple when he first joined the club. I don't necessarily mind who starts against Chelsea. I think it depends how you overthink it. In terms of Pochettino plays a four-man defence, Chelsea aren't going to be used to that system. They've got their injuries at centre-back, whether it's Thiago Silva, I don't think he's played too much. Levi Colwill, who's just signed this long-term contract. They've signed a couple of players from Monaco. You don't know who that four is going to be. Yeah. So that's going to be new relations. It's like, do you just put Nunez in there? Do you have a bit of chaos? Just rough him up a little bit, see if you can get
on the
left,
I presume,
that could be down the middle. Yeah. You think, well, Diaz is that electric pace. He could really exploit whoever the right-back is. I think Reece James is back now, so you'd imagine it'll be him. But then if you go on form, fitness... You think Jota has to start and then Gakpo. But this is it. I've just basically said a reason for all four of them. Yeah. Like, Diaz has looked good in pre-season, but you think you're not going to be able to just hit the ground running and be fine now. Like, it was a freak when Van Dijk did it after his ACL injury. Diaz has had a bad knee injury. It will take him time to get fully back to his very best. You're going to have to manage him carefully. Yeah. And maybe when you've got that explosive pace for him and Nunes, they're perfect as the impact subs. But then, you know, Jota's perfect as a sub to get you a goal. And Gakpo, his versatility and the fact that he's a unit, you could put him up front, lad, you could put him out wide, you could put him in midfield. It gives you so many options. Like I said, when TC was answering, I honestly don't mind which one of them starts because you still reckon they're going to get goals. And that's what we're seeing, whether it's second division German sides, Championship Leicester or Bayern Munich, they're all providing goals, they're all providing assists, and the relationships are blossoming. Long may it continue.
This is proving to be a bit of a problem when I've been picking my fantasy football team at the minute. Because I don't know who's going to be starting for Liverpool.
Have you made a decision yet? Is there any
Liverpool
players?
That's why you just go for Salah, because you know he's the one who's going to start.
I've got Salah, but I also had Gakpo up front. But who knows if it's going to be him or Nunez playing, so...
It's either
going to
be what? Gakpo... The only time
no Haaland in my team, though.
Is Gakpo goes midfield. Otherwise, your answer is just going to be splitting between him and Nunez, depending on who's in form, who you're playing. Yeah. So you're going to be disappointed half the season.
And Tom, if I was you, I'm not a fantasy football league expert, but I won't be giving my tips away on camera. I would be keeping them rather close to my chest.
Just wins it all anyway.
No, I don't have Haaland, so I won't be winning.
Now, I tell you what, Echo one to look out for, as he is always, every year. Distance Dave, Josh Williams. He wins it every year, and I suppose that's no surprise to viewers of analysing Anfield. He's just obscene. Like, it doesn't matter who, what year it is, who's come in, he's always winning the Echo Sport Fantasy League. It's getting frustrating. I'm the admin. I might boot him out this year because it's just getting boring.
Well, speaking of forwards, I think it'll be rather rude not to mention Ben Doak and his performance yesterday. Another fine second half cameo. I think the peak of that was turning Alphonso Davies lovely on the halfway line and kind of sprinting away. Very old fashioned winger. You know, we said direct and, you know, so fearless in his performances, whether he's playing at Kirby or, you know, Champions League Bayern Munich, you know, or the under-19s in between that. We've spoken a lot about him this summer, but are you lads firmly still in the camp of that he should be staying at Anfield? You know, a lot of games on offer. You think of the Europa League, the League Cup, and then even, you know, later in the season, the FA Cup. Tom, you know, take it away. Tell us what Liverpool should be doing with Ben Doak this upcoming season.
I think that he should keep him. I think, you know, he's shown enough, I think, in the games he has played, that he's good enough as a, you know, an impact player. He's not going to be starting a lot of games in the Premier League, or, you know, the majority of his chances probably will come in the cups, the early rounds of the cups, Europa League, group stages, you'd imagine he'd be playing and that sort of thing. So I think it would be pointless to send him out on loan, to be honest, when you've got all those chances for him to play this season. You know, if you get back to next season, Liverpool are back in the Champions League, he's not going to be getting the chance to be, you know, they're not going to be throwing him on in Champions League games, you wouldn't have thought. So this is the perfect time to give him a chance, really, because, you know, the early rounds of the Europa League, of all respect, Liverpool would think they would be okay getting out of the group really fairly comfortably. So there's going to be a lot of chances for people like him to get some games, probably even start a few. So I think it would be, yeah, wouldn't make any sense at all, actually, to loan him out at this point.
And I also think with loan players as well, I think people forget the player that happens away from the pitch. I think, you know, the loan has to be right for both clubs, obviously, but also the play. We're talking about, you know, a lad who's not even turned 18 yet. You know, does he move away from home? You know, does he go into a first team environment of, you know, football league opposition or whatever? You know, or does he stay at Liverpool and learn, you know, under the lights of, you know, Mohamed Salah, Luis Diaz, Diogo Jota, Cody Gakpo? Theo, kind of your take on it, and I'll throw in Bobby Clark as well, because I think he deserves a mention. I think he's been, you know, I know we're regular watchers down at the academy, and, you know, he's always been a player who's kind of caught our eyes, but I think this summer he's really stepped up, and you know, his transition, I'd say, has been seamless. He's a really tidy player, keeps the ball well, and I think a lot of Liverpool fans are now starting to look at him and think, you know, maybe not initially or immediately like Ben Doak, but certainly long term he's someone who could be knocking on the door.
Well, Doak's an interesting one in terms of when we've seen him at the academy. He gets lots of goals, he gets lots of assists, and defences can't cope with him. Like, he's stepping up to the first team and he's making an impact, but that final ball is still lacking. So it's like, what is the best way to take that next step? Is it by being with the first team, getting these odd games in the domestic cups, maybe in Europe, and still playing with the under-21s? Or is it going and doing what Harvey Elliott did and go and get a year out in the Championship or something like that? Play week in, week out, get roughed up and really learn the true nitty-gritty side of men's football. Yeah, learn the trade. And you could argue either way for it. I think with Europa League, Liverpool are in this new position where you can just keep them all for 6 months and then reassess in January, because you're going to give them the group games.
God, there's no UEFA Youth League football either.
Yeah, there's no UEFA
League. That's a big thing.
So you can give them those games, see how they get on, part of the first team, see if they get many Premier League minutes, see how the squad's doing, and then reassess in January. Go, is it best for you to probably not play as much in the second half of the season, or go out on loan then? Doak does have this unfortunate point over his name of he's not going to be on Lisby because he's not been at the club long enough yet. So for him to play in Europe, he has to be in that 25-man squad. So that will depend on who they bring in. And that depends on homegrown, age and everything. So they could, by all means, I think now you've got rid of Fabinho and Henderson, there is room for him to be in that squad. But if you go and sign three or four players, say all of them are foreign, all of them are over the age of 21, there might not be room for him. But ideally, you're going to give him game time in the Europa League and he'll get some minutes in the domestic cups as well. And you just reassess in January. I think Bobby Clark, it's a more difficult one because they have done this massive midfield revamp. I say massive, it's only two players so far. But we know it's going to be three or four players, more to follow. And you think, where is your game time going to come from when everyone's fit, everyone's firing, and this is the Liverpool's strongest team? You get your League Cup games. He would get the European minutes. And it's another one where you're probably more comfortable about fine sticks for a few months and then go out on loan in January, because I think he could benefit from a loan. He is someone who needs to learn that training. He's that year older. I think Bacetic surprised everyone when he got into the first team last year because he was sort of at the same step as Clark, like the same age, same year group. Clark maybe needs a little bit more.
I think Bacetic as well, people forget that the year before. I mean, he'd hardly kicked a ball for the last 6 months.
He was 18, he was still a centre-back, wasn't he, for most of it? So it does take time, but then it can just explode. It can all click into place. Like Liverpool, worst-case scenario, don't get another midfield. Or they get the number 6, but they don't get another or number 8. Then McAllister's knee injury turns out yesterday. Oh, it's not a knock. He's out for a couple of months.
Don't say that.
And then you are needing Bobby Clark. And then he gets in for the Premier League games, second game of the season, at home against Bournemouth, plays really well. And then he's part of the conversation. Like, you don't know. And this, when you've got these opportunities, there is a chance to have a look at him. But it's a long-term project. These boys are still 17, 18 years old. You only need to look at Curtis Jones, where that's how long it takes to really take establish that next yourself. Step and establish yourself fully. They're going to be inconsistent. They're going to be an out in the team. But if we've got 4 years of that from these two lads who are so exciting to watch, whether it's on loan, in the academy, or in the first team, bring on the end of the decade when they're first team regulars.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Absolutely, you know, plenty of excitement for them, and I'm sure two summers they won't ever forget. But someone who has kind of been there, done that, and kind of, I suppose, is probably a figurehead for Clark and Doak to look at in the, you know, in the years ahead is Trent Alexander-Arnold. At the end of the last week, or sorry, start of this week, was announced as vice-captain, with obviously Virgil van Dijk, as I think everyone expected, was announced as Jordan Henderson's successor as captain of Liverpool Football Club. Tom, I don't think we've had your kind of take on this yet, and I know me and Theo have said our piece in terms of who we thought should be captain, but just your kind of reaction on that then. A lot of people have said maybe Robertson could have been in with a shout as vice-captain, and Alisson Becker as well. What are your thoughts?
I was just about to say...
You're a goalkeeper captain.
I was going to say I'm glad it wasn't a goalie, because I don't agree with goalies being the captain. I don't know. I just
find
it strange.
Is that how you kind of do it on your fantasy footy then?
I know Spurs had Lloris as their captain. Yeah. I just don't understand, if you're from the keeper's perspective, organising the team from back there. I just don't think it really works. So
I just sound like it's a dig at Jordan Pickford somewhere in there as well.
De Gea was obviously United's captain, wasn't he, for a while?
I was going along with what you said, then I heard Alisson mentioned there. I just wouldn't know. I'm glad it's not Alisson.
All right, I'll flip it round. Is that the same for Mo Salah then? Been introduced to the five-man leadership group, but... As captain of Egypt and someone who's given his best years to Liverpool and kind of been a constant performer, you know, good, bad or indifferent, is he someone who maybe should feel hard done by that he's not been captain or at least vice-captain?
Probably not, no, because I don't think he's as good as a player as he is. I don't think he's like a leader on the pitch, Salah. If you're in a difficult moment, I don't think he's sort of...
But you don't think he leads by example in terms of getting goals and big moments?
He sets an example, but I don't think that necessarily makes you a good leader on the pitch. Same with Henderson, in the sense that he was kind of the opposite of that. Yep. You know, he may not have been, you know, the most skilled player or the one who...
But he levelled everyone else.
But he is a good leader and good organiser on the pitch. I don't think Salah necessarily is that. So I think Virgil van Dijk is the obvious choice. I think Robertson, I could see that as a shout. I think I can see why people would say him, because he, again, is very vocal on the pitch. Would be a good option. But yeah, I just don't see... I don't think Salah can... He's got his own... He'll be focusing on scoring the goals, leading
to that.
Yeah,
I think you've got to be selfish as a striker, haven't you?
That's what I mean. I think he can be selfish at times on the pitch as well, so I don't think he necessarily has that captain kind of material. Yeah. You've seen him at times as well, you know, sort of sulk when he gets subbed off, that kind of thing. And again,
the Egyptians are coming for
you. If you're a captain, you can't do that, and I just don't think he really fits the mould of it. So yeah, I think it's the right decision.
And Theo, slightly older than myself and Tom, you'll probably remember the days of when Steven Gerrard was made captain at a similar age to Trent Alexander-Arnold.
I remember when Sammy Hoopier was captain before that.
So obviously Gerrard takes that, the mantle has been captain at 23, I believe it was. Trent obviously 24 and is now vice captain. Surely in the next two or three years, we're talking about Trent Alexander-Arnold being the full-time Liverpool captain. Is that the right move? Have Liverpool future-proofed their kind of leadership ranks with that appointment?
I do think so, yeah. Like, that's why he's the vice-captain. Like, we look at the pecking order last year. Andy Robertson was ahead of him in the pecking order. And Klopp said, I think when he was waving off Henderson, that he's always had long-term captains.
Yeah.
Now, for your entire football memory, Liverpool have had long-term captains. So it was Gerrard for 12 years, Henderson for 8. That's 2 decades. And Van Dijk, realistically, he's going to have it 2-3. Signs a new contract. You might get another couple of years out of him. He's not going to have it for anywhere near that length of time. So it does feel like Trent Alexander-Arnold is a Liverpool captain in waiting. He was saying, as I think as far back as 2018, 19, that he wanted to be a future Liverpool captain.
Yeah, he's always had his eyes set on it, hasn't he?
So this is that next big step. He is the poster boy, isn't he? You put him in this position of Trent back, which it was in my mentions this week, actually. Someone christened it as a Trent back formation. He told me a position. He told me to credit it to some idiot on the internet. Sadly, the username is lacking from my mind at the moment, but I just quite like that, Trent back. I think that's what we should be calling it from now on. But yeah, he's in this central Trent back position where he's just dominating play, and it seems everything about Liverpool resolves around him. So it feels like it is that gradual step. He is going to be the poster boy. He is going to be this future captain. He can learn the trade from Van Dijk, become this leader in the squad now, and then he can take it on and be Liverpool captain until he's, in his mid-30s, even if it's early 30s, and then have a long legacy like Gerrard and Henderson before him. It does seem that natural step. But like TC was saying about, you want to see that more vocal side for him. You want him to take more responsibility. Maybe by giving him the armband, you see that side from them. Like, I think there's quotes going around that I think both you and me have touched him at some point this summer. Pep Linders saying he gave Trent the armband when he was like under 16s, and that he flourished from there. He flourished from that responsibility. So you'd like to think that this will be another step up for him, that he can take that next step and go, I'm Liverpool captain. Yeah. Got the armband, vice captain. Got the armband on. I'm the leader now. This is what we do. He's best player in this squad by an absolute mile in terms of natural talent. He will be the one who outlives all of them in this squad. You forget he's only 24 now, isn't he? Like, that's ridiculous that you could still see another.
He's won every single trophy at 24.
Won every single trophy, and you could still be in this squad as a genuine first choice player for 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. That is insane. Long may it continue, and it is the right choice when you think of that long term proofing. But people probably do put too much emphasis on armbands and captaincies these days, but it is important at Liverpool Football Club. And you think of so many famous figures, so many big names have worn that armband, from Emlyn Hughes, Phil Thompson, Tommy Smith, Ron Yeats, all the way to Sammy Hoopier's, Steven Gerrard's, Robbie Fowler's, Rush, Barnes, Alan Hansen. I'm just going through a whole list of captains here, aren't I? But there's so many.
Mark Wright, don't forget Mark Wright.
Pretty much all of them have lifted trophies as well. So hopefully we'll see that from Van Dijk this year. But they're the big figures at Liverpool Football Club. And Van Dijk, right choice now. Netherlands captain, a real leader in that squad, a role model, someone everyone looks up to and can marshal him. But Trent's going to be this captain in a few years' time. And we're just waiting for that next succession where it's not going to be who's the Liverpool captain? We already know who's going to be the next Liverpool captain.
Absolutely. And as you say, talking of trophies, obviously it all begins next week at Stamford Bridge. But before that, Liverpool play at Preston. I believe, Theo, you'll be there alongside Ian Doyle, who'll be freshly returned from Singapore. Hopefully we might see something of Stefan Bacetic, maybe too soon. Apparently he'll be continuing kind of his rehabilitation with an introduction to team training at the end of this week. But just in terms of next week then, Theo at Preston will be the first time seeing Liverpool in the flesh this summer after a long break. What are your kind of thoughts? What are you looking to kind of see in this final week of pre-season?
You'd like to think the starting 11 that they select is going to be pretty reminiscent to what plays against Chelsea the weekend after. You want to see him get more minutes as well. Like, you want to see your 11 get at least 60 minutes, some of them pushing towards 75 and taking those steps. You want to see a clean sheet. A clean sheet, I think, is really important. Just get a first choice back four on there and flourish. It would be a big ask for a number six to be signed by Monday. Let's be honest, we're on Thursday now when we're recording. But maybe we'll have this wonderful weekend. We'll find out tomorrow that Lavia's not playing in Southampton's championship opener because an accepted bid's happened and it's all wrapped up over the weekend. We shall see. But yeah, just get something in place for the new season? Like, give us 9 or 10 players where we can say they are starting against Chelsea. We've got some stability there, ready to go, and just a load more goals from the forwards, please.
Absolutely. And Tom, is it perhaps arguably the stuff off the pitch that we'll be looking forward to more than perhaps his friendly at Preston, as Theo says? You know, Lavia is supposed to be in action for Southampton. I think they play Sheffield Wednesday tomorrow night, as Theo says, in the Championship opener. But is it, you know, maybe the kind of progressing with that deal, and or maybe Andre, is it those kind of things that you may be looking forward to more than actually seeing Liverpool run out for the fifth time this summer?
Yeah, probably. Theo's looking forward to the clean sheet as much as Linda Henry, I think, at the moment, who's known for loving a clean sheet whenever Liverpool keep one. Often,
I was wondering where you're going with often, that, Tom. I'm so glad you recorded that.
Often posts about it. Have you never
this
seen that?
This is a family-friendly podcast, TC.
Have you never seen that after Liverpool win?
No.
Always hashtag clean
Tom,
sheet.
Tell the viewers, not me and Theo, we don't want to...
Hashtag clean sheet from Linda Henry after, whenever Liverpool keep a clean sheet.
You're paying too much attention to our Instagram and Twitter, no, TC.
Sean Bradbury, for listeners of the podcast, is also onto this.
I don't throw Sean under the bus, Tom. You're in this on your own.
Go back to Lavia.
I'll ask you the question again, Tom. Are you looking forward to seeing Liverpool's...
Will you have a clean sheet if they sign Lavia?
I'll stir this back into kind of a sensible direction. Tom, are you looking forward to seeing Liverpool's pursuit of a defensive midfielder take stage next week more than you are looking forward to seeing the run-of-the-mill run out on Monday night at Preston?
It depends if we get another 4-4 draw or something crazy going on at Deepdale, but
it's another second division side as well, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
You'd like to think they win.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with the search for a new midfielder. Lavia, you know, it could happen. Russell Martin, their manager, who's speaking about it, his press conference sort of saying they expect him to be in the squad, but
it's all a game of chess, isn't it?
Could change. I think I was just seeing as well that Livramento's not been included in their squad.
He's had injuries though, hasn't he?
But he's been linked to Newcastle, so that, you know, the fact that Lavia is in the squad.
And James Ward-Prowse too.
Yeah, so. I don't know. It's too hard to say at this moment in time because it can just change from, you know, hour to hour. So we'll see what happens. But I expect Liverpool may come in with a third bid for him, and just whether or not they're prepared to put
heard up, it here first.
Put out the full $50 million.
Blood Red exclusive.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining us.
It's not really an exclusive. There has not been a third bid at this time.
I think Tom's talked himself into enough trouble for one episode of the Blood Red podcast. So that is us for today. But be sure to join us next week after Liverpool's friendly on Monday evening for all the build-up to Sunday's game at Stamford Bridge and the start of the new Premier League season. I've been Keith McDonald, Theo Squires and Tom Cavilla. Thank you for joining us.
You've been listening to the Blood Red podcast from the Liverpool Echo.